Deb.
And I'm Sarah, and this is Cosmopolitics. Cosmopolitics is a podcast simultaneously uplifting and criticizing popular culture in the U District, Seattle, on our phones, and beyond. Fundamentally, Cosmopolitics is about asking and answering the question of, why does culture matter?
To start off our episode, here's a word from our sponsors. Elm Coffee Roasters, open in Pioneer Square and SLU for takeout, and soon, indoor seating. Order coffee and more at elmcoffeeroasters.com. And the M. If you're looking for a place to live in the fall with student-friendly amenities, spectacular views, and that's walking distance to campus, check out the M Seattle. They're the only student-living high-rise near UW, and they've recently dropped the rates on all their floor plans. Visit themseattle.com for more info. Okay. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cosmopolitics. This week, we're going to be talking a lot about, like, diversity in movies and shows. And specifically, we want to start out by kind of talking about a little bit about, like, those tests that people have created over the, like, years as, like, litmus tests for testing, like, different types of diversity. And so, like, before we kind of just get into the actual stuff, we kind of just want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So we first want to talk about the Bechdel test, which is probably the most common and the most popular and the one you're most likely to know of these types of tests. But basically, the Bechdel test searches, or I guess, is a way to measure if there's appropriate or good female representation in a movie, in a TV show, in basically anything. And kind of the only real requirements for it is that it has to have two female characters, they both have to be named, and they have to talk to each other, have any kind of conversation about something other than a man. And it's actually very much, it's harder to pass this than you would think. But yeah, so we're going to be talking about that one a little bit today. And we're also going to be talking about the Kent test as well.
Yes, the Kent test is kind of similar, except it specifically deals with, like, women of color. And this was created by a Twitter user, I Write All Day, who I follow and love, named Clarkisha Kent, so Kent test. And it's basically kind of just testing whether representation of women of color is good. And there's a bunch of criteria, so I'll just, like, quickly read through some of them. This character must not be a walking stereotype slash trope. They must have their own plot slash narrative arc. Must not exist just to hold down some male character in a story. Shouldn't be included to prop up a white female character. Shouldn't be just for the purpose of fetishization, as we all know. Must have another interaction with another woman or femme of color. So kind of similar with Bechdel test as well. And lastly, they must not be the go-to character sacrifice in a film or a show or whatever.
And then kind of the last one we want to touch on today is called the Vito Russo test. And this was developed by GLAAD in kind of response to the popularity of the Bechdel test. And what this one does is it checks for LGBT representation. And basically, what you got to do to pass this one is the film has to have a character that is identifiably LGBT. And the character also must be not defined by their sexuality. Like, they exist for other reasons, and they also exist as a fundamental part of the plot, and they're not just a side character.
For sure. So kind of given all those tests and stuff, we're going to talk a little bit about some of our shows and movies that we, like, enjoyed or maybe kind of had issues with. And to kind of start off, we're going to talk about The Good Place. Yeah, a little bit of both. Things can be more than one thing. Yeah, okay, so you go.
I feel like The Good Place, it does a pretty good job with a lot of this stuff, like, in general.
Yeah. I think that The Good Place, as far as, like, diversity of shows goes, they're, like, way better than a lot of other shows, I will say. I mean, like, because, like, I mean, if you just look at the main cast, main characters, principal characters in the show, you have Chidi, you have Tahani, you have Jason, and they are all people of color, which is, like, pretty cool, because that's about,
It's half the main cast, I guess, because there's also Eleanor half the main cast. And Janet and Michael.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. I do say, like, in regard to, like, the tests we talked about, probably wouldn't pass the Kent test, no. given that there's only, like, one, like, woman of color in the show.
Yeah. I think they're definitely, Tahani meets some of those criteria, and I think it's probably better than,
oh, yeah.
obviously, a lot of other probably representation of femmes of color, but it's obviously, yeah, they definitely didn't do a perfect job with her.
Yeah, definitely. But I do think she was probably done better than, like, a lot of other shows, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that there is only, like, one woman of color in the show.
Yeah, and it's, exactly.
Like, you know.
Mm-hmm. I also think, honestly... Then, oh, go ahead.
Oh, wait. You can go. You can go.
I was going to talk about... I was wondering whether this passes the Vito Russo test or not. Because, like, Eleanor, like... They don't really talk about sexuality too much, but Eleanor definitely makes, like, some remarks that are, like, pretty, not explicit, like, in terms of, like, graphic, but, like, pretty explicit in terms of, like, her, like, mentioning that women are attractive. And, like, she definitely, like, has a crush on Tahani. Like, I don't know. I guess I don't know how they would treat that.
Yeah, I don't know, because I remember there were definitely comments she makes. Like, I remember there was one, I think she was talking to, like, Chidi or some other guy, and it's like, it's 20 whatever, like, you should be bi, everyone is bi.
I literally just watched that episode. She was like, oh, like, are you bi or something? And Chidi's like, no. And she was like, why not? Like, more men should be bi or something. That was so funny.
Yeah. I know.
So I guess.
But she's right, you know.
She is. I mean, she is right. I guess to pass that, it has to be identifiably LGBT. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't know if she's, identifiably, but...
Yeah.
I mean, she's definitely not defined by her sexual orientation, and she's definitely tied into the plot. I guess it just matters if she counts as defined.
Yeah. Because I don't know if they, like... Because they mention these things a little bit throughout the show, but it's not really, like, a huge... Like, I mean, I don't think they talk about it much, and it's not, like...
Mm-hmm.
Eleanor says, I'm bisexual or whatever. But also, I don't think that's necessary, you know?
I think there's pros and cons to kind of being, like, subtle about it like that, which is good that it's just being normalized, you know, that, like, well, you don't have to make a big deal, you have to come out or whatever. But also, we're still at a place where, like, we do need to see stories of, like, people coming out, like, accepting themselves and all that kind of stuff. So I do think there's benefits to kind of both of those ways to do it.
Yeah, especially because, like, you know, Eleanor literally is dating, like, Chidi, a man, you know, so it does, like, it is presenting as that kind of relationship, and because, like, there's not really any other, like, LGBT relationships or characters, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So.
What do you think about the, I guess the Bechdel test is the last one. So, yeah, that definitely does pass, I'd say.
Oh, for sure. Like, I know that... Specifically, like, thinking about, like, Eleanor and Tahani, there's literally a scene during the first season where, like, everyone finds out about, like, this is a spoiler, but everyone finds out about, like, Eleanor, like, not belonging in the good place or whatever, and so Tahani's kind of being snarky, and then Eleanor is like, no, we're not gonna be, like, those girls who are fighting over a guy, so that's, like... Also, like, a literal, like, kind of, like, reference to the Bechdel test, sort of.
Yeah.
I
liked how they were making a point with that scene. Like, they explicitly said what they were trying to do, which was, like, we're not going to be these kinds of women and do this to each other. And I appreciated that. I thought that was good of them to say that like that.
Yeah. Because that is also just such a horribly common trope in, like, film and media and stories and stuff. So it's, like, nice to just... break away from that. So, I mean, I totally think this passed the Bechdel test for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I guess this is a little bit in a different direction, but I also, another thing I liked about The Good Place was how, it wasn't very American-centric, and I guess it definitely kind of was, I guess, but, like, there was more of an effort to make it more, like, international and more, like, you know, especially diverse and, like, I guess, yeah, international than a lot of other shows, especially, like, I mean, Chidi's from Australia. Why did I forget that? And especially, like, and Tahani's obviously from England and stuff. So I feel like they tried to kind of go for that, but I definitely think they could have been better about kind of that part of it as well.
Definitely. Like, I think also, like, that whole American-centric, like, identity, I guess, also, because, like, they're talking about the afterlife and everything, you know? So I do like that they pulled. One thing I will say, and I don't even know if this is about diversity, but, like, I would have loved, and I remember I was so confused when I was watching, like, the third season or whatever, The Good Place. Like, I would have loved to hear, like, Chidi speaking French, because I remember during the first episode, he was like, they, like, changed the language or how you sound, so it's whatever you can hear, and it's like, I'm actually speaking French. I'm like, I want the French when they were, like, back on Earth and stuff, you
I had that
know?
exact same problem with it too. And they kind of like gave an excuse, like, because Eleanor walks into his office or whatever, and he's like, oh, I know English and French or whatever. But it's like, no, like that would have been so cool. Like you had an opportunity there that
Like,
you set up for yourselves and you
yeah.
wasted it.
Also, like, if he really did know English and French, he, like, literally could have spoken English when they were, like, in the good, bad place or whatever,
Yeah,
you know?
exactly. Well, I guess because French was his like native language or whatever, but
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, it's also the whole thing with, like, movies and stuff wanting to default to English when, like, I would prefer just doing, like, an original language and, like, putting subtitles. Subtitles are, like,
Exactly.
underrated so
I
much.
watch everything with subtitles, and it sucks when I watch things with other people
Exactly.
because they'll turn it off, and I'm like, wait, oh, I don't know what's going on again.
No, I need subtitles for everything in general. Like, even if
Yeah.
I'm just watching, like, an American show,
No,
English show, you
actually,
know?
like just regular
Yeah.
shows. Yeah. I guess The Good Place, if you haven't seen it, highly recommend. And it does have its issues, but I think that
Absolutely.
it definitely tries and it's going in the right direction. And from what I've seen of it, in
Yeah.
my opinion.
Yeah. And, like, The Good Place also just, like, has a lot of, like, ideas and themes they deal with that are, like, really important.
And it's also
Yeah.
really funny, so
So funny. I love
yeah, highly
it.
recommend that show. Open since 2015, Elm Coffee Roasters is devoted to high-quality coffee that's easy to brew at home and a joy to drink. At their roastery and cafe in Pioneer Square, Seattle, Elm obsessively roasts small batches of coffee that they source with a focus on sustainable practices that lift up the whole supply chain and protect the future of the coffee plant. Elm's goal is to make a truly exceptional cup of coffee and an experience that you look forward to every day. Cafes in Pioneer Square and SLU open now for takeout and soon dine-in service. Please use code PODCAST at elmcoffeeroasters.com for 15% off your next coffee order. So welcome back, everyone. I think we were going to start talking about some of the problematic and maybe some of the good ways that Disney and especially like childhood shows and kind of a lot of the common shows that we've all kind of seen as kids, how they handle people of color, especially as side characters and guest characters, and specifically as villains as well.
Yeah, so, like, I've mentioned this a lot before to, like, everyone I meet, but I've been in the habit of just, like, rewatching a lot of shows, especially, like, on Disney Plus recently, that I, like, watched when I was, like, 10, 11, whatever. And so, like, I've been noticing it a lot more critically,
Yeah.
'cause, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of just watch it, it's fun. And, like, obviously, most of these shows and movies are, like, predominantly white cast or, like, white passing if they're not totally white. And, like, one thing I've noticed is that, like, the times that they do put people of color, they are almost always guest actors, and, like, almost always guest actors do play, like, the antagonist or, like, villain in the show or movie. And so it's, like, really interesting to me to see people of color in those roles, but never, like, the hassle to put them in, like, actual main character roles. And I feel like there's something there being that's being said there, like, I'm willing to put you as villains, and that kind of just cements certain ideas in your head. And I don't think it's a whole, like, totally even, like, a Disney thing, because, like, even in, like, all shows, whether it's, like, ABC, NBC, the CW, whatever, a lot of times when you do see people of color, they'll either be, like, one-time villains, or they'll just be, like, supporting characters, and not so often one of, like, the one or two, like, people of color who are on a
And
main
they're always there to
cast.
support the white character's development and like be there to support the white characters and
Yeah.
guide either like kind of guiding them and teaching them or like helping them in other ways, like serve like all that kind of stuff and just like doing emotional labor for the white characters in a lot of cases.
I was just gonna say that there's, like, so many In general, there's so many, like, movies that, like, there's a black character and they're, like, propping
like, on it, like, everything that I can think of is, like...
Yeah.
I mean, you have, like, the main cast, and I feel like there's always the token person of color, but then it's... I mean, that's basically what this is. It's just, like, token person of color in terms of side characters. And then I feel like the villainization of people of color as well is kind of a separate part of a similar issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's, like, I don't think... diversity mm-hmm. is not just visibility, you know? Because it's, like, you're being very selective about how visible you make them, you know? Like, there's more than just slapping them on a screen for a minute
for
of
me,
screen
For me, the one
time,
that stands out... I don't know what you think about this, but the example to me that stands out, like, the most in this is Aladdin. And I don't really know why, because that is a movie, like, about people of color, I guess. I mean, I'm sure that has its, you know... We could get into that, I guess, but... It's, like, if you look at literally the way that, like, Jasmine and, wait, is his name Aladdin? I, like, don't even remember. No, his name is not, his name isn't Aladdin, is it?
Wait, now I'm questioning myself. Wait, it's Aladdin? Aladdin. It's Aladdin.
I don't remember. I thought his name was something else. Wait, I have to look this up right now.
Oh, my gosh. Wait a second.
Oh, no, he is... I don't know why I thought that. Okay. His name is...
I think questioning myself.
The monkey has a name that's, like, also starts with an A, right? I don't know. I haven't seen the movie in a while. Anyway, I guess my point was that, like, the way that Jasmine and Aladdin are drawn is literally so much, like, more... Like, their features are just literally more, like, European and, like, more... They look white versus the way that Jafar, who the villain is drawn, is like, I mean, he has a really big nose, like, he kind of definitely has a lot more, like, Arab features, like, stereotypically, and it's just like, this is in a movie about a different culture and they're still doing this.
In general, like, I think with animation there's the whole thing of, like, good characters and, like, the normal characters get very much, like, Eurocentric features, and they make sure to really stretch and exaggerate the, like, ethnic features.
Yeah.
I'm using air quotes for, like, the villains and stuff. Like, that's a very big common thing. And I think, like, a lot of people have written about this. Like, it's no secret.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, like, yeah, this is... I guess we're really not getting into anything super deep here. But I feel like just the way that European and white features are equated with goodness, and anything else is just bad, and the villain is...
I think on top of that, there's the whole... Because I know that a lot of people talk about, with especially, like, Disney animation, it's, like, coding them as people of color, and also, like, queer coding, you know, a lot of villains, they're like, oh, they're gay, but we're not calling that, and also gay is bad, you know, that's, like, the kind of vibe you're getting.
Exactly, like, a little on the flamboyant side, it's like, why? This isn't really necessary for
like,
this.
I think, like, just an example I was gonna bring up is, like, this is, like, I watched this movie a long time ago, but I remember, like, the first Wreck-It Ralph movie, the villain was this, like, candy dude, and he was, like, in salmon color and very, like, extra and stuff, and he's absolutely the villain, and I remember that was definitely a queer-coded character.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I do remember that in the racing game or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, you're so right.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Dang. Yikes. I never even noticed that one.
I know. I only noticed it because it's, like, I'm, like, doing, like, a bunch of reading, just, like, pop culture commentary, and I'm, like, seeing all these, like, shows from childhood pop up, and I'm like, damn. Literally.
Interesting. They really slipped some subliminal messaging into that we did not notice.
I know. There's so much subliminal messaging in, like, everything we probably watched growing up.
I know, honestly. I mean, that's what's fun about doing this now, is kind of going back once we've, like, learned more and informed critical thoughts.
Yeah.
And being able to go back and, like, reevaluate a lot of things we loved as a kid. Like, I think it's interesting and fun.
For sure.
I guess related to the guest character thing is, we kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but I was talking about how in the show Friends, that is, in my mind, one of the worst shows in terms of just diversity at all. Like, it's just these six white people just doing nothing. Like, that's it. For, like, 8 seasons or something. I don't even know. And I still watch the whole thing. But I could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure there's only, like, maybe 2 named people of color. And I think even, like, women of color, it's just 2. And that's it. And every single other named character is white. And it's like, That's, like, this was only the 90s. Like, that wasn't that long ago. Like, they really should have,
Yeah.
Wonder what those execs were thinking.
Yeah,
probably not much.
Yeah, brain's empty, no thoughts. Yeah, I, like, didn't watch that show just because it's, like, it didn't look that appealing to me. It's literally just, like, a bunch of white people living in their own world, mm-hmm. to be honest.
It's actually one of the most, like, diluted shows, I feel like, and the most just unrealistic. I mean, obviously, like, TV shows are unrealistic, but, like, they live in this apartment that they should not be able to afford. Like, it's just an idealized white person's life, and I don't think we realize, like, how much no one cares, especially now. Like, there's the way, like, that show was so popular when it first came out, and now there's absolutely no way that show would be popular, like, at all.
Yeah. It's also just so funny to me. It's like, is this what white people dream of for their life? I was like, that's just kind of, just based on, like, the impression I got from that show.
No, I guess that is, like, that's kind of... That's what those studio executives think is the dream life for white people, I guess. And everyone, truly, because everyone wants to be like white people. Yeah,
that's so sad.
Is also the inherent message.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Speaking of, like, iffy-ish NBC sitcoms... One that's, like, popular and still running right now, and I'm pretty sure, like, literally everyone, at least in the U.S., is aware of, is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, that cop show that we all loved at some point, even if we don't anymore, we can't deny it.
It was, like, I feel like for me, I guess maybe other people have this experience, too, is, like, I started watching it kind of when, it, like, I don't know, high school, whatever, when it came out, and then, you know, we all kind of... learn more, maybe got a little radicalized, and then took another look at it and was like, I don't know about this show.
I feel like I definitely hyped up Brooklyn Nine-Nine for being so diverse, because it is diverse, you know? Because, like, the main cast literally has a bunch of people of color in it. Actually, I think the main cast is, like, majority or half people of color, actually, now. Yeah.
I think so, too.
But it also, I feel like that also really shows kind of, I guess, the extent to, like, very, like, liberal ideas that kind of make us be like, oh, this is a great show, it's diverse, even though it's a literal cop show. Literal, like, copaganda, cop propaganda. And so it's, like...
And also interesting that the show with a significant portion of black people and people of color... like, black and Latina women is two of the communities that are most, you know, verbalized by police. And they're the ones that are being associated with
it. Yeah, it's so funny because Brooklyn Nine-Nine literally does try to deal with, like, serious issues like racism and sexual assault. But, like, at the same time, you can't, it's at odds with the fact that cops are racist as fuck, and also... a lot of them are literal, like, sexual abusers and, like, rapists and stuff. And, you know, cops literally do nothing about it. And they, like, try to say that in the cop show. And they do, but it's, like, I just... there's a lot of dissonance there, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's, like, you can try to do as much good as you can with, like, being diverse in your casting, like, talking about, like, a lot of a range of issues. But, like, inherently, this is a show glorifying cops. So whatever you do that's positive is just going to be outweighed.
It
kind
of just reminds me of, like, the...
It's kind of the way I see it.
It reminds me of the whole, like, identity politics spiel when we were all talking about, like, Kamala Harris. Like, yay, it's a woman of color, but she has a horrible record, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely.
It's like, I get the same vibe.
I was going to say the one thing that I really do think they handled particularly well was... Rosa's, like, coming out and, like, her whole bisexuality and that whole thing. And I guess maybe I haven't seen that for at least a couple years, but I remember at least when I was watching it, I was like, this is one of the most, like, realistic, I feel like, coming out experiences and, like, just just queer experiences that I feel like I've seen. But also maybe just I just related to her more personally, but I was really impressed with the way that they handled that.
It was handled properly, I think, because I think they didn't try to over dramatize. I don't know how to say words. You know what I mean.
you almost got it. You're close.
Because, like, I feel like typically they go out with a route with, like, parents disowning you or like parents being like, oh, I 100% support you. Mm-hmm. And like, those can be the case, except I feel like those are so overplayed on TV. And I think I like mm-hmm. the route they took it. Definitely a lot more like nuanced and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's more, I mean, that's going to be more common. Like most people, I mean, I guess I don't have the statistics on that. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but I feel like it's more common to have a mixed experience, you know, like your parents, there's goods and bads about it versus like you're getting kicked out. It's never like kind of mm-hmm. one end of the spectrum. And I think that that's what I like to see.
Yeah, it was good. That was definitely like handled well. And also, I think also because that was not handled in the context of being a cop, you know, because like the specific like racism incident with Terry and sexual assault with Amy, those were both handled in the context of them being police officers, and it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think this does too also what you were saying earlier about like the very fact of like this is a cop show is very similar to a lot of the MCU stuff, and especially like the way that the MCU has handled race too, and especially like in the most recent like Falcon and the Winter Soldier that's everyone's been talking about recently. And I guess spoiler alert, I feel like we've talked about the show kind of a lot, but a spoiler alert, I guess, if you haven't seen it, but by now I guess hopefully everyone knows that Sam Wilson, who was the Falcon, is now Captain America, and he's the first Black Captain America. And I guess just there's a lot to unpack with the phrase Black Captain America.
My God, it's giving me very Black War Criminal vibes.
Yeah. Oh, that shouldn't be funny.
It's not funny, but it's pain.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, I like definitely have thoughts and issues with the recent like what is it called? What is the show actually called? Falcon and the Winter Soldier mm-hmm. show. Because it's like, so there's, have you watched the whole thing?
Yeah, I did finish it.
Okay, so I will say in that one episode where Isaiah had like a series of monologues, he was right. He mm-hmm. was right.
No, seriously.
He was so right.
And that's why I was kind of mad why he went back at the end. He was like, oh, you're doing good, kid, or whatever. And I was like, why did your opinion change? I don't understand what's different here.
He was literally right. And it's like that show also just has issues because they're using this Black man to say things like mm-hmm. you will never fix things with violence. I agree with you, but peace the way. And it's like,
yeah,
this is so ahistorical also when you consider like the civil rights mm-hmm. movement and like, you know, the ongoing mm-hmm. fight for Black Lives Matter and everything. It's like, oh my goodness, because diversity, again, is, like, not just mm-hmm. about, like, visibility. It's about, like, what ideas are being parroted and, like, what are they doing, like, in the context of this mm-hmm. show, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like both the characters of Isaiah and also Carly Morgenthau, who is, mm-hmm. again, who's the main bad guy, and mm-hmm. she's, like, that is definitely, she's a person of color, she's a woman, she's, like, young, she's trying to do things, you know? And the way that both of them were handled is just so, especially their issues. Like his whole thing was like, what, like, why should I give anything to this country? Like they haven't done any, like, you know, especially like with what they did with, wait, I feel like I'm not explaining this well. Basically, I mean, yeah, what they basically took advantage of him for sure. And the way that, Carly Morgenthau, like literally her whole point was like, socialism and like we should make sure that everyone has like the whole refugee crisis and everything. So I didn't explain either of those well, but basically I feel like those are just, Marvel is like so close to the, like they're in the vicinity of the right thing, and then they just take a hard left and it's like, oh, yeah, you're almost there, you're on the topic.
Yeah, and I think they understand that they're doing that, to be honest. Like, nobody is mm-hmm. going to. It's honestly, like, I was even talking to this with this, like, white guy I know, and he was like, it was so weird that they're, like, making her out to be the villain, because she literally has, like, ideas that are fine, you know? I think it's just,
I was literally like, I don't understand what the problem is. It took me until, like, the end of the, whatever, like, when they introduced a conflict, took me, like, to the end of the episode. I was like, oh, this is the problem here. This is what we're doing now.
Okay. And it's like, it's so weird in general, on like in media and entertainment, when they're like villainizing like radicalized people and people fighting with violence, because like, If you just, like, crack open a history book, there is no fucking thing that, like, was solved with peace.
I know, and it's also, like, have you been awake during the last year and, like, seen what's been going on? Like, it just feels extremely poorly timed for them to make a show about that, to have currently going on be going on.
It's so...
I was like,
terrible. Also, like, the fact... And let's connect this again to, like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. They have all this going on, but then they're taking the show to, like, show issues of racism and stuff with, like, there's that cop scene where they're, Sam and Bucky get in a fight, and then Bucky is, like, in later episodes, like, oh, yeah, I get it. I should have realized what it was like to be, like, a black Captain America. I didn't think of it. And then, like, you know, the whole racism with, like, Isaiah and Bucky and everything and all that. So it's, like, really funny to me that they're pushing all these, like, freaking, like, imperialist ideas while being like, oh, don't worry, we get racism. It's, like, the classic, like, I feel like neoliberal project, to be honest.
I mean, it was just so obvious that it was written by a white person. Like, this is a white person putting the way that they see these issues into the center of the discourse about it versus centering people who are actually affected by these issues.
Yeah.
So, don't know about that one.
That's a whole Marvel thing.
Like, that is a whole Marvel thing, but it, like, the thing that makes me the most mad about it is that it works. Like, it works on me, too. Like, there was that scene when Sam, like, he comes down, he has the wings, and it's the whole, like, dramatic entrance of him as Captain America, and I was like, yo, like, let's go! Like, I was excited, but then I was like, ugh. Because it's, like, it preys on, like, I don't even know. Like, everyone loves superheroes. Like, there's the whole, like, the moral thing about it, and, like, you want to look up to, you want to believe that there's someone who's looking out for you, I guess, type of a deal. And I think that's, like, that's not inherently problematic, but then when you have a black Captain America and you're trying to glorify it like that, it's just, the dissonance, like you were saying, is truly astounding.
Yeah, it literally works. Because it's like, I love to, like, engage and read in cultural commentary. I mean, we literally do this podcast. And I was, like, reading, I was curious what, like, mainstream people were saying about the plot of this show. And oh my god, people literally writing think pieces about, like, Carly Morgenthau had the right idea, but violence is the answer. And, like, their people are literally getting suckered into this. I'm like...
No.
And there's a bunch of people who are, like, trying to continue to... This is a whole nother conversation, but, like, victimize Bucky Barnes and, like, being, oh, poor white man, you know? And it's, like, people literally just being fed the boot and just taking it in.
Oh, definitely. Like, you're supposed to say, oh, like, you're supposed to feel bad for Bucky. And, like, you do, I guess. Like, he, again, like, it's just so complicated because, again, like, you do feel bad for a man who was, like, brainwashed for 70 years and forced to kill people. And, like, obviously that's not his fault. But at the same time, you're right. Like, why is Bucky the one who's the center of attention here? Like, if you do want to be making a show about race and all this stuff you say you are, like, Sam should be the one who's in charge of stuff. And also the way that people who are, preferring Bucky over Sam in so many cases too. It's like Sam is the main character of this show.
Falcon
and the Winter Soldier. But
so true. Also, this is a really side note, but I refuse to believe that Bucky is not racist. He's literally from the 40s.
Yeah. There's no way he would have been able to hang in Wakanda like that. Like, he would have said some dumb shit. He would have gotten himself kicked out.
Yeah.
Plus, also, why do the Wakandans, like, I never got why they like him so much. Like, why they care about him. Like, literally at all.
Yeah.
Like, there was that line, too, when, especially in Black Panther, when, because they obviously saved Bucky, did his arm, everything, at the end of Infinity War, and then... in Black Panther or something, when I forget that guy, whatever the guy that's he kind of looks like a mouse, a little rodent actor, I don't know.
Wait,
Ross? He was a white guy. He got injured, and then in Black Panther they'd like take him back, and she was like, "Oh, another broken white boy for us to fix." And I was like, "Girl, you don't have to fix him. Like, no one is making you do that. You can leave him."
I know. I guess they're portraying them as like they just care about everybody, and we will indeed also help these people because
exactly it's like black people picking up after white people's mess. It's again back to that same
like the whole characters. Like the mammy trope of like black women supporting Yeah, there's so many layers to this, and it's like a lot of people. I feel like a lot of people actually don't see it because most people just watch Marvel for entertainment. But it's the fact that Marvel is literally some real, like, it's our like American propaganda films, to be honest.
No, it seriously is.
Yeah,
and people don't question it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, haha, funny superhero movie. Like, things are exploding, and it's like, okay. True, and you can enjoy it for that, for sure. I enjoy it for that, but then you just can't accept all those messages at face value.
Yeah, superhero films are like inherently political, so like you can't just watch it as like mere entertainment, you know? Yeah, so I guess just thinking on the flip side and thinking more happy thoughts, I know that one director and screenwriter who does this pretty well is Jordan Peele. Like, I have watched his, like, the two movies that people probably attribute him the most to are, like, Get Out and Us. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed both of those because it's, like, it's not just that it's, like, a majority black cast. And it's really funny. I like it because the only white people he puts is usually just, like, joke racist characters, which is great.
Yeah.
And it's, like, he just does it well because it's also written by him, you know, so you don't have just like a white person writing what they think in their head, what people of color act like. So those are actually really well done. And like the other layer too is that, like, since he's writing it, he's actually writing about like very, very good like commentary and critique. Like, a lot of people mention Get Out because it's a really good sort of like analogy for how the 2020 election played out in terms of a lot of like white people behavior, like white liberalism.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I guess, like, I don't want to get super into it, but I remember the, like, one of the white characters in Get Out. Another spoiler. This episode is full of spoilers.
They all are.
They all are. Just put it in the description. So spoiler, one of the quotes by the white people are like, they're like all saying these very subtly racist things, and he's like, oh yeah, I would vote for Obama a third time if I could. It's like, you know, that like white liberal behavior.
Trying to get brownie points.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of a nice, I guess, some of like the good that comes out of like some of these more diverse films, because it's actually like very good like cinema, you know.
Like, A, he's a critically acclaimed filmmaker, and then also he's going to be able to tell it from the actual point of view of the actual people who are in the film, and it's just
Also,
like, that's like, why it's so much, but it's like white people just can't write stories like that. Like, you just can't.
It also really helps that Jordan Peele is a comedian, and like comedy, you kind of actually have to be smart to do.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And especially like comedy as effective as he can do.
Yep.
Like, that's hard.
And
he's making like really interesting statements with it too. Like, damn.
Yeah. He's doing things and just remaining out of like the Twitter feud spotlight.
Yeah. No, good for him.
Good for him.
I think the flip side of that, I guess, to... Not to take it back to the negative, but I was thinking too, I guess we were kind of talking about this before, how Kevin Costner is one of the most prevalent examples we could think of like an actor who has been typecast as a white savior. We didn't realize this until we were like looking up his Wikipedia page, but he's been in so many movies where it's just, and especially like in all different situations too, and like different scenarios, like just kind of all over the board. It's just him in the middle of a movie about some other story that should not be centering him, and he is the one who's saving everyone and just, pulling white savior stuff.
Like, I remember when I was like thinking of examples for this episode, I was thinking like Draft Day and Hidden Figures, both of which he was in. I was like, wow, what a coincidence. And so we were talking some more, and then we're like, oh shit, why is he in all these like white savior movies? Like, this is like his thing. And I oh my god, Kevin Costner,
because he's also doing? In The Help, he's in McFarland, he's in Dances with Wolves. He won an Oscar for Dances with Wolves, which, like, the thing that gets me too, like I was saying earlier, is like, it's also just multiple different like ethnicities, like just situations in general that he is, I don't know. I don't know how you even get typecast in a role like that.
Mm-hmm. I know. That's okay. It's like really funny though, to be honest, like he's constantly playing in all these roles.
Yeah. It honestly is kind of funny.
Yeah. But it's also so telling that Hollywood does not know how to make movies about people of color without centering themselves.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, seriously. That's it in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's also just like why when you're thinking of like Judas and the Black Messiah, you know, it didn't even really center 100% on Fred Hampton. It like they have to make sure to center the narratives that affect like white people or like mm-hmm. why this person like died, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you can take a step back. You have all these years of movies. You have Birth of the Nation.
Exactly. It's also like why. I don't know. As a white person, I'm bored of hearing the same stories over and over again. And I can obviously imagine that people of color are even more sick of it than I am, of course. But I don't just get how white people, like, who are the people in charge? Like, why did, I mean, I guess, it's kind of a self-answered question. It's like, why do they want to see themselves over and over again? It's mm-hmm. because they want to see themselves over and over again. But,
yeah.
No one else wants to see that.
It's also just so telling of how much kind of in their own world they're in, because like I know that personally I like think diversity is good just because it makes things interesting inherently. Mm-hmm. Like if mm-hmm. you put if you make a TV show that has a bunch of people of color and maybe just sprinkle one or two token white people in there, that could be mm-hmm. a fun premise of a show, because like honestly, white people are boring, man.
No, fair.
It's so interesting because when I think about these like shows that are more diverse than I do consider more diverse, they always want to make sure at least half of them are still white people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, and that's kind of the point with The Good Place too, bringing it all the way back to that, is like as good as it is, and I think it does have a lot of really good points, like they do, like, three of the main cast members are people of color. And for a show about the afterlife, why? Like, that's... also, Janet and Michael, they're both not human. So they right. could be literally any, like, they could look like whatever they wanted to look like. Why are they just two random, boring white people?
Literally, the fact that he chose to be a white man, like,
yeah.
old white
that's
man.
That's when you know he was a demon. Is yeah. He wanted to be an old white man.
And I think there's a line in there somewhere where he's like, this is why I chose this, like, human body or
probably.
Whatever.
I mean, yeah. I bet they... But the thing is, like, they make jokes about it. Like, he can kind of be like, oh, like, they acknowledge it, but then they mm-hmm. also don't do anything about it. Like, they're, like, still casting them.
Yeah, and it's like, imagine if you did a black man and make them make this man, like, make those jokes. Like, that still works.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it makes it just more interesting. I agree. Just diversity for diversity's sake, if nothing else.
And it's, like, it has to be, like, genuine. Because I think a lot of people do try to, like, cram in, like, people of color as main characters. But then it's, like, their mm-hmm. whole character hinges on them being whatever race they are mm-hmm. or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I remember I always bring up, like, I remember there was this Disney spinoff of Jesse, and there was, like, an Asian character who I think this Asian girl was a main character, maybe. And, like, mm-hmm. her whole identity was being Asian and having strict parents and wanting to go to Harvard and needing perfect grades and everything.
Oh, my God.
And I was like...
That is just stereotypical. Yeah.
I was like... So, ugh. Like, and that's not really, like, an exception, you know? It's pretty mm-hmm. normal.
No, definitely.
That's a lot to, like, just sit with.
It's always a lot. I think we also ended up talking for a very long time about
all
this stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
I just think this is... I mean, I feel like there's so much more we could say as well. Like, we're just scratching the surface of this. And there's so... You can go in so much more detail on, I feel like, all the things that we talked about. But...
I know.
I think at the end of the day, it's just important to acknowledge that, like, everything is going to have pros and cons. And especially everything written by white people... Mm-hmm. is just something to be extra critical of. And, like, the way to fix a lot of these issues is to put more people of color, more women, more queer people in the writing rooms of these shows and these movies and stuff.
Yep. And I think, like, we should always continue to, like, push for progress, because I think there's always going to be more to be done. But I mean, in the meantime, literally, it's like, we're not saying you can't enjoy anything, even if it feels like you can't enjoy anything, because sometimes I feel that way. But like, you just have to keep an open mind and like be critical about the stuff you watch, you know? Like, whenever I watch anything, I like am using my brain occasionally. And like, I think that's just really good to do. Like, you can watch a bunch of like dumb things, like we talked about, we both love like cop movies and shit, but it's like we're cognizant of the fact that these are bad.
Exactly, you can take the good parts from it and be critical of the bad parts, and I think separating art from the artist and separating art from, well, that's maybe a different issue, but
sometimes
in general, I feel like that's not the same thing, but there's always going to be pros and cons of things.
Also, like, the whole thing with, in this case, in this context, like, separating art from the artist, it's not even necessarily saying that we should ignore, like, the bad part. It's just, like, we need to be cognizant of it, and we need to be critical of it, you know? It's not just, like, we're going to ignore it and then only say good things, you know? That's, like, not what we're saying.
And I think that's kind of, I mean, that's how people, as we were saying, like, with Marvel, like, all these big mainstream things that have just insane messages in them when you think about it, that we just don't criticize at all. It's just...
Lots.
It's just there. Only the good stuff is what people talk about and don't give enough critical thought to it.
I personally believe, like, enjoying something means you will also criticize them, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Especially if you love something, too. Like, if you're, I mean, because personally, we both are really like, we both really like pop culture and TV shows and movies and all this stuff. And when you really like stuff, like, you get invested in it and you, A, want to improve it, and you, B, want to know more about it and know how to improve it.
Exactly.
So, I just think pop culture analysis is really important.
For sure. Especially because, like, we're constantly engaging with it. You can't really disappear from it unless you, like, live in the woods, you know?
Yeah. Seriously. That's the dream.
Yeah.
Cottagecore vibes.
So true. Yeah. Okay. Anyways, I think that's it for today, right? We went through so much.
Thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. We hope you had a great time talking about all this stuff with us, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Cosmopolitics. Catch us next time for more hot takes on pop culture. Thank you.